Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., all rights reserved.
Even though you make payroll every Friday, you don't have a guaranteed paycheck. You're the owner, and you eat what you kill. We are back. It's 13 after. Thank you very much for joining us. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Thank you very much for checking that out. And our phone number is 888-822-8255, 1-888-822-8255. Sarah Calvert, as I promised you, is our guest this hour, and our good friend Sarah is the founder and the principal of Calvert & Associates PC, a law firm which she founded in 1991, and she specializes in small business issues. Most of her clients are small businesses, and she does a great job for them. Sarah, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much, Jim. Is it significant that you put that part about eat what you kill right before you bring the lawyer on?
Exactly.
I was just checking.
Yeah, we arranged that. That's okay. All. That's all. Everything. We do nothing accidentally. Everything is choreographed down to the nth degree. Every word, every period, every comma, every bit of music. Right? Right, Eric? Eric is shaking his head. All right. Sarah, but yes. Before we get started, I wanted to mention something that I think is important. Today is Universal Children's Day.
I think that's wonderful. What do we do on Universal Children's Day?
Hug your children five extra times today.
Extra times today.
Five extra times. You know you have to have five a day just for maintenance.
Oh, absolutely.
So everybody has to have five hugs a day just for maintenance. And children probably need maybe 10 or 15.
Mm-hmm.
So today, hug your children five extra times today.
Does giving five count? That's my son's favorite thing to do.
Okay, well, if it makes him happy, that'll work.
It does.
That'll make up for one of the five, but
okay.
The other four have to be real live bear hugs.
Can I read him an extra book, too? That's my favorite thing.
Okay, that'll make up for one.
Okay.
All right, Universal Children's Day, folks. Hug your children. Last time you were with us, Sarah, we talked about the process of finding and interviewing and bringing new people on board in your company. And I think where we were was to talk a little bit more about the interview process.
Mm-hmm.
And I think toward the end of the hour last time you were here, we were getting into what you can say and what you can't say, what you can ask and what you can't ask.
Well, that's probably the most common question I have with people who are frantic on their first interview. What can I say so I won't, be illegal? And it's amazingly astounding to me how many companies get this wrong. I was interviewed by a 12-person law firm once who asked me what religion I was. I couldn't believe it. I was stunned.
What were they going to do with that information?
Well, they were going on and on about how we are a wonderfully inclusive firm. We are multidimensional. We have Baptists. We have Lutherans. We have Methodists. What religion are you? And I wanted to say, well, I'm a Jewish, Greek Orthodox, Catholic, Muslim. What's it to you?
Yeah.
Throw a little spice in their interview process. But it was obvious they were looking for people just like them.
They were fishing.
They were fishing.
And it really was a little bit ham-fisted, was it? It wasn't even all that subtle, was it?
Oh, no, it was not subtle at all. And I was absolutely astounded. I went back to the employment office at the university, and they were banned for 5 years from interviewing on campus.
No
kidding. Because it's completely illegal. It was so obvious. They wanted people just, good Protestants just like them.
Is that what they want? I see.
Mm-hmm. Well, they listed like five different Protestant religions.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't mention anything besides those. I got a real clue as to where they were headed with that.
And since you were a Hindu, that didn't work
at all.
That's
right. It didn't work at all. I was so flabbergasted. And I remember as a young military wife being asked if my husband was in the military.
Yeah.
Completely irrelevant to the job at hand. But something in the area I lived in at the time, San Diego, which was asked all the time.
Well, I've come up in the years when you could ask them anything you wanted to.
That's right.
And I've moved into where you can't ask a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
And I have found that I don't need to know most of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the stuff that we used to ask, and it wasn't that we were being bad, it was just that was the practices 30 years ago.
Sure.
A lot of the stuff that you needed to ask wasn't necessary, and it actually just it kind of complicated the issue, really.
Mm-hmm. You know, last week, Jim, we talked about writing down a job description and getting the actual essential skills of this job on paper before you hire or interview that first person.
Right.
This is what the basis of your question should relate to. If the question relates to the job and not to the necessarily to somebody's personal life, you're usually on the right track. For example, if the job involves heavy lifting, the question is not, are you disabled in any way? But this job requires that you lift 50 or more pounds on a regular basis. Is that something that you are capable of doing?
Mm-hmm.
That's a perfectly legitimate question. It doesn't go to the issue of disabilities, accommodations, any of those hot button issues these days. It simply asks, are you able to perform this job duty? Can you work on Sundays? Or can you wear a particular uniform? Not, are you Hindu? Are you required to wear certain head wrappings? You know, what's this weird dress you're wearing? You know?
Mm-hmm.
None of those questions are relevant, because those are questions about that person that are not relevant to the job. The question is, can you work on Sundays, and can you wear a uniform? Those are what you require for your job.
Okay, what if I said this to you, and I'm going to say that this is a man that I'm talking to, and I'm going to say, John, this job requires my company to invest thousands of dollars in your training, and you won't even be productive for our company for at least 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything in your life that you know of right now that would cause you to have to relocate and quit this job? And you see what I mean? In other words,
absolutely legitimate question.
Okay.
Absolutely legitimate question.
Now, I set you up for that one.
Okay.
Now, Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
This same question. I'm making the same statement to you about training.
Right.
But once you get this training, while you're in this training, you will not be able to break the training. And once you get in it, you won't be productive for 6 months. And then we'll really need you to be able to be available to the company. What are your family plans? See, I set you up for that one.
Yeah, you set me up for that one. And I was going to say, as a woman, of course, we get asked this question.
Yeah.
All the time.
But it's
so much easier to ask this question in a proper manner, Jim.
Okay.
If all you said to me was, can you foresee anything in the next year that you have planned that would interfere in this and you being here routinely on a day-to-day basis?
Uh-huh.
And that could encompass everything from, I plan on having needing to go to drug rehabilitation,
right.
So by the way, did I mention I was pregnant?
So you have to be subtle about the way you ask those questions.
Absolutely.
But you can't ask them, but yes. As long as they're tied to the job description.
Exactly. Clear.
Very, very
clear
good point. Though. Excellent point. Sarah, stand by. We're going to take a break. Folks, it's 20 after the hour. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. 888-822-8255. Give us a call. It's a beautiful morning. Anytime I'm visiting with my good friend, Sarah Calvert, who is our resident small business attorney. She's the president of Calvert & Associates. She has an outstanding website, one of the neatest ones I've seen, especially for a law firm. Sarah, give us the address, please.
It's www.calvert, C-A-L-V-E-R-T, and associates, all spelled out, .com.
I went there this morning.
Did you?
It's neat. What's the dragon mean?
Well, the dragon is what I collect. It's an ancient Chinese symbol of wisdom, and if you collect enough of them, you'll be very wise.
She has a neat dragon on her website.
And he breathes fire, too.
Check it out. Yeah, I saw that. And give us your phone numbers, please.
It's 800-826. Oh, hang on. I just lost it. 526-8687. And then the local number in Virginia is 703-591-5315. Apparently this beautiful morning has emptied my brain.
That's okay. It happens to me, too. Our phone number, folks, if you'd like to join Sarah and me and ask a question about hiring or employee, anything involving employees, or if you just have a regular small business legal question, 888-822-8255. My website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. Okay, Sarah, we got this prospect in front of us.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to ask you, are there any other really dramatic things that you cannot do or say to this person that we're about to hire? We think this is a person we want. We've checked their references and they seem to be okay. We like this person. We think they've got the credentials that we need. But we're just trying to make sure that we make the right decision.
Well, you know, a lot of people like to know whether or not the people they're hiring are married and have children. In some cases, people think it, you know, some people want that because they think it's stability. In some cases, they don't want that. They want a single person who's able to travel extensively.
Mm-hmm.
The question is not, are you married or do you have children? The question is, are you able to travel extensively? Do you have anything that would interfere with a regular travel project? Or do you have you been in this country a long time? Looking at somebody who might be from a foreign country, inquiring as to their not to their status as an immigrant, because that's a legitimate post application and post hiring question, and when they have to produce documents. But what country are you from? Which seems like an innocuous question, but it could be construed as excluding people from certain countries, especially countries that may at some time have been at war with the United States. I remember back long ago that anybody from Iran or Iraq was, of course, just persona non grata.
Back in the 80s.
And there was a tremendous uproar over, we're not going to hire these people. Nobody was going to hire a Japanese person in the 40s.
Can't a lot of these things be handled at the very beginning by saying, tell me about yourself?
They certainly can be handled that way, but how you use that information, of course, if you use that information to discriminate against that person, it's just as if you asked the question.
Uh-huh.
So you've got to be very, very careful that information that's given to you unsolicited is not used again against that person. Oh my goodness, this is somebody that, you know, my dad fought in the war against. I'm not going to hire this person.
But the only thing is, I mean, of course, that would be something pretty hard to prove, wouldn't it?
Well, in certain areas in around Washington, D.C., if you aren't hiring somebody from Vietnam, then you aren't hiring a local person at all, because there's communities full of different ethnic backgrounds, and to systematically exclude those people would be quite obvious. And records can be produced. They can look at your records for anywhere from 3 to 5 years to prove a discrimination case that every person who was, say, Vietnamese that came into your office for an interview, it was systematically excluded. You will also find that certain protection agencies like B'nai B'rith or people who are looking for discrimination will send out test people to maybe a white person or an African-American person with exactly the same credentials and see what you hire.
There is a story that I know to be true about a guy who went into an inner city in the Chicago area, and he started a little company and hired 100% minority employees.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, took some people off of welfare and gave them a job, and they were doing great. The business was doing great, and the EEOC came in and found that he was not hiring all of the minority. I mean, there were some minorities who weren't as represented as others were, and maybe it was the Asian. Asian group were not as represented as the others, and they started, I mean, they basically shut him down.
Well,
the EEOC can really...
Yeah, they are, so you don't want to cross...
You don't want to mess with those folks, I'll tell you right now.
You don't want to be hiring just because they're minorities. That's where you go wrong.
Right. Well, of course, that was the demographic of where he was.
Right.
Let's take a break. It's 29 after the hour, folks. We'll be right back. We're going to hire this person when we come back, and Sarah's going to tell us how to do it when we come right back. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. Welcome back, heroes. It's 33 after, and I want to remind you that today is Universal Children's Day. Be sure to hug your children at least 5 extra times, and don't forget, tell them you love them. That's important, right, Sarah?
Absolutely.
My children used to say that I love them too much, and I told them that that was a high-class problem they were just going to have to deal with. It's 33 after, and we're visiting with Sarah Calvert. She is our resident small business attorney. Her firm name is Calvert Associates, out of Fairfax, Virginia, and which is where she practices law. We're talking about hiring employees, and we've interviewed this person within an inch of her life, Sarah, and now we think we've got the right person, and we're ready to make an offer.
Well,
how do we do that?
Well, I prefer that people put offers in writing. But I also ask that they keep it very brief. We're not trying to build a contract out of a letter. We want to state the position that we've hired this person for, give a little bit of a description of the position that we've probably already told them if they've been through the process, but just state, you know, you'll be doing X, Y, and Z and other duties as assigned by me. and state the either the salary, either in a yearly salary or a monthly salary, but be real clear about what I'm stating. If I'm going to
hourly rate,
or if they're going to be hired for some odd hours, be sure that you give an hourly rate, even if you might give an estimated annual rate,
mm-hmm.
Because you know this is something people are going to rely on, and they're going to wind up showing the labor board. So make sure you're very accurate and don't make any mistakes in the salary area. If there are any immediate or in the next 60 or 90 days benefits that are going to be added or allowed for them, then you should put them in there.
Whenever the benefits are going to come into force,
yes.
Make sure they know that.
Make sure they know that, mm-hmm. because that makes the job offer more attractive as well.
And you can write this up yourself, folks. You don't have to have a professional to do this.
No, this is not.
This is just common sense.
Yes, but the most important ingredient is when you're done with that letter and you look at that letter, if there's anything on there that's doubtful or that's just a possibility, take
yeah.
it out.
Yeah.
This is absolutely positively the bare bones of what you're giving this person.
This is something that you're going to be required to perform under.
Yes. And while you're hoping it's not going to be construed as a contract, if you, for example, say I'm going to pay you $11.77 an hour, and in fact you only pay them $10.77 an hour, then you're going to be in a heap of trouble. So, or promise them health benefits and then not give it to them.
What if I only want non-smokers to work for me?
This is different states have different regulations. You know, I'm in the South where tobacco rules, so it's actually against the law in my state to discriminate against a smoker.
Mm-hmm.
And in most states that is not the case. In most states you can ask about that. Unfortunately, no test cases of the ADA have come up on that issue that I'm aware of. But it is a could be considered a disability,
mm-hmm.
Depending on how they define the addiction to tobacco. So it's kind of a tricky area, and the best thing I can say is everyone in the world is entitled, everyone in the United States is entitled to 2 15-minute breaks if they work an 8-hour day, as well as at least a half hour.
Did you know that some states, that's not a requirement in some states?
Well, unfortunately, it's a federal requirement, and if your business transacts any federal, does any interstate transactions,
yeah.
you fall under the federal law.
Okay.
So it's real hard to fall under
that
a lot of
that came up recently.
Laws.
I had someone to call me
mm-hmm.
and ask me from another state what the deal was on that, and I found out that in that state that there is no provision for any kind of a break. But that's another story. I don't want to get off.
No, but that's true. But there are breaks that are allowed under the federal law.
Most people give their employees a 15-minute break in the morning.
And you really can't say you cannot smoke.
Right. Okay. Now I understand that. But can I put in my offer letter that this is a smoke-free
yes,
company?
That you can, because it's an environmental question, not a personnel question.
But and it's okay to put that in the letter so that there's no misunderstanding, so the person doesn't show up and say, I didn't know I couldn't smoke at my desk.
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, it's so rare that anybody can anymore anyway. So
right.
Most smokers are used to being abused, but you don't want to abuse them because they are a smoker. You want them to understand that this is the environment that you're keeping.
Okay. All right. Now, what about a probationary period?
Well, this is a real popular thing for employers. I'm going to put you on this probationary period.
I use it all the time.
I was going to say, where it really comes out of is, in most states, you are not going to be liable for unemployment for somebody that works for you for less than 30 days, somewhere around that
mm-hmm.
that area. So, but I frankly am not real keen on probationary periods, and here's why. In many cases, it makes it sound like you're going to keep that person on for the entire probationary period. Now, in 99% of the states, you have the right to fire that person at any time, anyway.
Yeah.
So probationary period doesn't really make much sense. I can certainly see a training period whereby, you know, you're expecting their levels to be of skills to be low and then be improving. And I can certainly see giving people either a monthly or every 90 days review, but stating it as a probationary period makes it sound like you're going to keep them no matter what in that time period, and I don't want people to be deceived.
And
in fact, I might fire them at any time.
What I do with that, in that case, Sarah, is, and I literally say this, I say, look, we're going to start out, you and I are going to have a probationary period with each other,
mm-hmm.
and this is for your benefit as well as mine. If in the next 90 days, well, first I usually say, you know, I'm an employer who cares about his employees, and I would never terminate you and just and ask you to leave that, you know, without any kind of a notice, and I'd expect you to give me the same consideration. But let me hold on to that. That's
okay.
Easy. I want to talk about this because I think this is important. It's helped me a lot in my hiring of people. 39 After, folks, I will come right back with this one with Sarah Calvert when we come back after these messages. 888-822-8255. We are back. It's 44 After. Thank you very much for joining us. I want to remind you that next week, Jack Harbour is going to be with us to talk to us about some salesmanship issues. Russ Brown is going to be back with us, and we're going to talk about buying and selling a business, some more aspects of that. Also, Mary Westheimer is going to be back with us, and she is going to talk to us about an internet survey that they did and how people felt about their websites and how they were working for them. That's going to be a lot of fun. Also, Roger Volcomer is going to be back to talk to us some more about how to be a better negotiator. Right now, though, we're visiting with our good friend Sarah Calvert. We're in the process of hiring an employee. We've gone through the interview process, and we think this is the one we want. And I was just about to tell you about how I hire people with on a 90-day probationary period.
Mm-hmm.
And I typically do this because I want them to know that this is for both of us. In other words, I guess the fundamental part about this aspect of hiring someone, Sarah, is that if they decide that they are not happy in 90 days, they don't have to give me any kind of an explanation. Now, maybe they don't have to anyway, but I just say that. You know, if you decide that you're just not happy here, then that's what this 90-day period is for both of us to find out. And if either one of us are not happy during that period of time, then we just part, and we part friends,
mm-hmm.
So to speak. And I've also been doing that, using that method by using an employment agency to find an employee for me, and they remain that employment company's employee for this probationary period.
I think that's a terrific way to hire people because...
But you don't like my other idea.
No, I'm not as fond because, of course, the implication is something different happens after
yeah.
the 90 days. The implication is that I have to give you warning and you have to give me warning before I leave. And there's a lot of situations where you want somebody out of there. As a matter of fact, I just had a situation where a client called me and said she found out from a fraud division of a credit card company that her credit card had been stolen by an employee.
Huh.
And, of course, you know, you don't want that employee coming back on the premises. There's no telling what they could do.
I guess maybe that's a holdover from the old days. But to me, it's sort of... I feel that it should be understood that if you leave my employment, that you give me notice. If I terminate you, I'm going to give you notice.
Mm-hmm. Unless you don't.
No, you're right. And so, okay, I've been doing it wrong all this time.
Well, it's not wrong. It's probably not going to get you in any trouble. But when you're dealing with interpersonal relationships,
yeah.
as you well know, sometimes people hear all of what you say, and sometimes people hear what you don't say.
No, they hear what they want to hear.
They hear what they want to hear.
They remember
what
they want
to hear. What they want to hear is, I'll never be fired without a warning
yeah.
or without a week's notice or 2 weeks' notice. That could be construed against you at a later date.
Just like a customer hears what they want to hear.
Exactly.
If you tell a customer that it's going to cost you somewhere between $1,000 and $1,500, they never hear the $1,500.
No, they heard the $1,000.
They only hear the $1,000. That's right.
So.
Okay, now I want to ask, now, I understand you've recently hired a new employee.
Yes, I have.
Now,
yes, I've hired another full-time attorney.
This is an attorney type, right?
Yes, this is
This is not
type.
A secretary or a
no,
receptionist.
No.
This is a professional attorney.
Yes, this is my wondrous new associate, yes.
Okay, your new associate. Now, I want to know what the gender of this individual is.
She is female,
as is female.
The rest of my office.
So are there any men in your office?
It depends on what time of the year you're talking
about. No. You're not gonna skate on this one.
Not currently.
Full time, there are no men in your office.
Not currently.
This
no.
sounds like an EEOC problem to me.
It honestly, I have a very small office. There's only 6 people in my office. But
then you went on to point out some of the decor in your office.
Well, that's right. Yeah, when you walk into my office, and I guess some people call it pink or mauve, maybe, you know, that mauve thing going.
Mm.
The office came that way, and we frankly never changed the decor.
Well, no wonder. You probably don't even have any men apply to your job.
No, that's not true. I've had many men apply, but very often they'll call and they'll ask for Mr. Calvert, and for the application, of course, that always gets my hackles
up. That's the kiss of death.
So that's what kills it in my office. But no, I didn't seek to do that. They also all happen to be working mothers. So it just seems like there's a haven for working.
Well, I tell you, I'm seeing a few violations here, Sarah.
I understand.
What about interns? Have you ever had any interns?
No, my interns, my young studs have always been men.
Your interns have always been men. There's a story there somewhere. I'm not going to go there, though. I'm just not going to go there. But paint the walls.
Okay.
Get something besides pink on those walls, and maybe you'll get some men in there.
Okay, I'll work on that.
You know, let me ask you a question.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me that you wouldn't be having a fit if every employee that I had wasn't a male and it didn't require them to be male.
It depends on the size
you
of
would,
your firm.
You would, of course you would.
Depends on the size of your firm.
You'd be all over me if I did
no,
that.
No.
Okay, let's move on.
And they're all good Methodists.
We've hired this person, and we've given them the job description.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And do we review the job description with them to make sure that they do we do that we review the job description before we make them the formal offer, or do we do it after we make the offer?
No, you've done it in the interview process. All your questions related back to it anyway.
Okay.
So I think it'd be overkill at this point. But I would certainly make sure that they're real clear on what's going to be done, and I would also leave that magical opening of other duties as assigned, because as you put a person in a job, you find out, oh, they're really good at this. You know, I haven't done a lot of this, but I could add this more to this job. I find that, especially in the people that I hire, everybody has, you know, certain skills that kind of pop up as you're training them, and you may find that you can take advantage of them by adding to that job description.
You know,
it's not written in stone, but it's a good, you want to use it as a bedrock.
Some people might be saying, boy, you sure have talked to this person a lot, mm-hmm. and I think it's appropriate to point out at this time, Sarah, that if in order to get the right person, to finally wind up with the one person that you want to hire, you may interview that person 3 or 4 times.
Absolutely.
Be prepared to do that.
Informally and formally. I take them out to lunch so I get an idea of their table manners.
It's a process, and it's a good process.
Yes.
We're going to talk about that process a little bit more when we come back after these messages. It's 50 After. I'm Jim Blassingame, a small business advocate. You're listening to the show that is dedicated to providing small business owners and small business dreamers with a maximum opportunity to be successful. And one of the people who helps us do that is our good friend Sarah Calvert, who's our guest this hour. We've been talking about hiring employees, and we've actually got this person just about hired. We've given them their offer, and I was just talking, Sarah, I think I was just mentioning about the process. That's where we were, and that's I want you to realize that if you've got a really important position, or if you've been having trouble filling a position for some reason, you can't seem to get the right person in there. Maybe it's your process. Maybe you're hiring people too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the first person that comes in the door, you're giving them a shot at it, and it really needs to be a process. Even for an entry level position, I would want to interview them at least 2 different times.
Mm-hmm.
And the more responsible the job is in your organization, the higher the pay and everything and the responsibility. I would want to do it maybe 3 or 4 times.
And something that I found to be a very good tool is to have the staff, you know, at a certain later interview, have the staff that's going to work directly with that person interview that person as well.
Right. Okay, now let's talk about drug testing and polygraph and all that kind of stuff.
All right. There are certain tests that a lot of people do post-hiring, but actually before they show up on the job the first day.
Right.
Certain circumstances, some of us are required to have drug testing. And in our area around Washington, D.C., a lot of the Beltway Banditos are required under their Defense Department contract to actually have drug testing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, it can be done by a local lab, but I would only do it in the circumstances where you were either had them on the road and driving, which is, of course, always a big risk,
mm-hmm.
or you had them in a situation where they were public safety of some sort, doctors and nurses,
so you
emergency room personnel, that kind of thing.
So
but on a regular basis, you are probably asking for a privacy suit if, you know, you're working in an office doing sales and drug testing is not really relevant.
So drug testing can really only be valid if it involves the public safety?
Well, it's not that it's not invalid. It's just that you're asking for privacy suits for people saying, you know, if I do drugs on the weekend and it doesn't affect my work,
uh-huh.
And I'm not in a public safety position, why are you asking for this invasion
well,
of privacy?
I was thinking you could, because I know I have clients who do random drug testing and all their employees.
No, it's not that it's illegitimate. It's just that you're asking for more difficulties.
What about polygraph?
Polygraph is illegal in many states. You need to check with your local state
attorney.
Why would
you want a polygraph if you don't suspect anything?
Well, in a lot of cases, what it was used for in the old days before a lot of states outlawed it was to see if somebody was a thief. But, you know, asking somebody, are you going to steal from me, is kind of a useless question.
Well, not only
have the intent today. But
not only that, but a polygraph is not admissible as evidence in court.
That's right. You can't use it in court anyway.
Yeah.
But using it beforehand, you know, you can get trapped with all sorts of illegal questions on a polygraph.
What about employee testing, perceiver testing?
Personality testing is a wonderful thing for a lot of people. Handwriting analysis, those things are all certainly usable in the hiring process. And you cannot hire somebody from what you discover from those tests. There's a lot of companies that give a series of personality tests, either Myers-Briggs or something like that. Those are all valid indications of what that person is, and they're
not illegal. And you can use that to not hire them?
Certainly, in most states. But again, this is sometimes state by state. You need to check in that particular state.
I got you. Okay, Sarah, next time you're with us, which will be in 2 weeks, we're going to talk about what kind of documents you're going to have this
person.
Agreements.
Yes.
Yeah, when we come back.
Okay.
Sarah, thank you very much. You did a good job. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Make some money, guys.
Okay, say hi to Matt and paint the walls something besides pink. Got to wrap it up for this hour, folks. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners, because without your courage, hard work, and devotion to your dreams, America would not be the greatest country in the world. And remember, when opportunity knocks, it doesn't know you've had a bad day. Greet it with a smile. This is Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and this program is for you.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.